We begin this week with Sefer Yehoshua Perek Tes, and having discussed in the previous prakim the battle against Ai, the first failed attempt to conquer Ai, due to the taking of the spoils of Yericho by Ochan ben Carmi, the subsequent punishment meted out to Ochan, the execution of Ochan, and then the second and successful battle conducted against the city of Ai, which was done with a great deal of military strategy. It wasn't just B'derech Nes march and conquer. It was done with a great deal of military strategy, an ambush to the south of the city, the decoy, the main military group to the north of the city, a secondary ambush group meant to fool the city. And now we move on to Perek Tes, the aftermath of the Battle of Ai. And in Perek Tes, we discover and read about the famous story of the Givonim, those people who lived in Eretz Canaan and deceived Yehoshua and Klal Yisrael into thinking that they were from a faraway country, thereby inducing successfully a willingness to make a covenant, a treaty with them. So we'll take a look at the opening psukim in Perek Tes, where we are told that Vayhi kishmoa kol hamlachim asher be'ever hayarden. It was when all the kings who were on the Eretz Canaan side of the Jordan River heard, Behar, those who lived in the mountain regions, Beshvelo, those who lived in the lowlands, Bekol Chof Hayam, those who lived on the coast of the Yom HaGadol, towards the Levanon, the Chiti, the Amori, the Kanani, the Priest, the Chiva, the Yebusi, they heard. The pasuk isn't specific about what in fact they did hear, but presumably they heard about the previous battles that Bnei Yisrael had fought against Yericho, against Ai, and the pasuk describes that their reaction then was Vayiskabtzu yachtav, they immediately all gathered together. It seems that Eretz Canaan was a hodgepodge of small little military cities or self-governing cities. They all allied themselves together, lehilachim, to do battle, im Yehoshua, with Yehoshua, v'im Yisrael, and with Israel, pe'echad. They were of one mouth. So, interesting to note is that Yehoshua singled out as their military target, and then Yisrael as well. Yehoshua and Yisrael. So targeting both. And the phrase pe'echad, of one mouth, leads the Medrash, the Yalkut Shimoni, to associate these kings of Eretz Canaan with the Dor HaFalaga, the door of the dispersion, the generation of the dispersion, Migdal Bavel. Because pe'echad, they were of one mouth, implies that they shared one common objective. Much like, says the Yalkut Shimoni, we find in Parshas Noach, Vayhi kol ha'aretz sofa achas. They were all of one language, which the Yalkut says means that these very different kingdom cities, kingdom states, allied themselves for one objective only, to battle against Kadosh Baruch Hu, and in this case, his representative, Klal Yisrael, in this world. And the Alkut says, their goal was to fight against God. Fight against God. Klal Yisrael being the representative of God in this world, Klal Yisrael being the ones charged with teaching the world about God's existence, the existence of one true creator. And when we speak of these nations allying themselves together to do battle against Klal Yisrael and God, it's to defy that truth, to refuse to accept that truth. And even though this pasuk describes, these are different nations, Chiti, Amori, Kanani, Pizachi, Bibusi, but they all came together for that one purpose, to fight against the Jews and against God. So this is the opening to Psukim here in Perek Tes. What the Malbim adds and suggests is that the Vayhi Kishmoa, that opening phrase, when they heard, and then Pasuk Beis, they immediately gathered together to do battle. What did they hear? The Malbim suggests, perhaps they heard that the most recent battle was, like we described before, a battle of military strategy. It wasn't like the battle against Jericho. Miraculously, the walls fall down after 7 times circling the city, blowing the trumpets, blowing the shofar. This was a military strategy battle. And all of a sudden, says the Malbim, the other nations of the country look and say, oh, these Jews aren't so supernatural after all. They only won because they had this superior strategy. They planned it out in advance, an ambush here, a main military army there. Oh, so they're just like us. With good superior strategy, we can beat them. With overwhelming numbers, we can beat them. That, says the Malbim, is what then led them to say, let's gather together, overwhelm them numerically with our superior numbers, and then we can overcome them. They looked at what happened at Ai, and they took that to mean that Klal Yisrael is no longer living off of miracles and Nisim. And in fact, we mentioned last week that Yehoshua was afraid of that. Yehoshua, when he hearing of the need for military strategy in the battle against Ai, was very much afraid that maybe this indicates that perhaps we're now living B'derech HaTeva. And that's in fact what the Umos Ha'olam here, the Shiva Umos in Shiva Amamim in Eretz Canaan, actually thought that this is proof that now they're just a regular people fighting by the laws of nature, and now we can overcome them. That's what encouraged them, emboldened them to now do battle against Bnei Yisrael. That's how the Malbim sees the opening two psukim here in Perek Tes. And now in Pasuk Gimel, we are told that the Yoshve Givon also heard what had happened with Yericho and with the city or the nation city of Ai. And Pasuk Dalet, Vaya'asu Gam Hema Ba'arma. They also conducted themselves with deceit. So what does that mean? They also conducted themselves with deceit. And the deceit that's described in the Psukim here in Pasuk Dalet and Pasuk He is how they made themselves out to be a group of emissaries coming from a faraway nation, a faraway land. They deliberately took sacks and bags that were worn out and flasks of wine that were all worn out and cracked or worn out shoes, patched up shoes, worn out clothing, moldy bread, dry bread. They made themselves look as if they were coming from a very, very far distance for a very, very long journey to pose as if they came from outside the country. But why does the Pasuk say, Vayasu Gam Hema? They also conducted themselves with orma, deceit. Yes, they're conducting themselves deceitfully. But what do you mean, they also? Who was the previous reference to? Who are they emulating? Who are they replicating? Who are they following? Who are they mimicking? Who before them conduct themselves with deceit that we now speak of, Vayasu Gam Hema Ba'arma? They also conduct themselves with deceit. And the Rambam will give various possible answers here. The Medrash Tanchuma, for example, in Parshas Nitzavim, writes that the Givonim themselves, this very same nation, tried this once before with Moshe Rabbeinu, and he was on to them, he was aware of what they were trying to do and who they were, and he rejected them. Now, if that's the case, it's all the more puzzling. If this happened once before, in Moshe's time, how could Yehoshua, Moshe's closest Talmud, not have been aware of the possibility these guys would try this trick again? If this was tried before by these same Givonim, how could Yeshua have fallen for this yet again? So the Mefarshim give other suggestions as to Gam Hema Ba'arma. They also conduct themselves with deceit. Of interest is Rashi's Pshat. Rashi says, what do you mean they also? Who preceded them? Ba'arma. So Rashi says, look in the Psukim in Parshas Vayishlach. Who in Parshas Vayishlach is described as having conducted themselves with deceit? We take a quick look back at Parshas Vayishlach, and we come across none other than the Bnei Yaakov themselves. The Bnei Yaakov themselves. In what context? That was in the context of Dinah's kidnapping by Shechem, and the Bnei Yaakov, the sons of Yaakov, wanted to, of course, rescue Dinah, and at the same time to avenge her kidnapping and her rape at the hands of Shechem. And the pasuk there describes that when they spoke to Shechem and to Hamor's father, the pasuk there says, "Vayanu bnei Yaakov es Shechem ve'es Hamor aviv bimirma," with clever deceit, bimirma. So based on that, Rashi says, oh, the Bnei Yaakov conducted themselves with Mirma when dealing with Shechem, who was from the Chivi nation. Here too, the Pasuk is telling us that the Yoshve Gibbon, says Rashi, were themselves from the Chivi nation. The Pasuk here refers in Pasuk Zion to the Bnei Gibbon as Chivi. Oh, they came from the same nation as Shechem, Chivi. Oh, you, Bnei Yaakov, dealt with our people, the Navi is telling us, with Mirma, with deceit. Bayasu Gam Hema. They too conducted themselves with regard to Bnei Yisrael with deceit. Now, it's not clear that the Yoshua Gibbon were thinking about this as, oh, tit for tat, they did this to us, we'll do this to them. It seems perhaps more like Min HaShemayim, this was fitting justice, perhaps, Mida Kenegan Mida, that if the Bnei Yaakov conducted themselves with Mirma, with deceit, then they are dealt the same cards when dealing with this same nation yet again, generations later, the Chivi, treat them and trick them with Arma. Now that's a very important Musar, because you would have thought Bnei Yaakov had every right to do whatever they did to get their daughter back from Shechem's hands. And yet, it does seem that they were faulted. After all, Yaakov got angry at them at the time, afterwards. Yaakov got angry at them. Yaakov was afraid. You've ruined my reputation amongst the Yoshvei Haaretz. You've made us look bad. You lied. You tricked them. You murdered them. Yaakov was not happy with how they dealt with Shechem. And it seems that Mida Kenegan Mida, they are being dealt the same way now in the reverse with the Givonim. Question? So you're saying it's not exactly parallel, because by Shimon and Levi, they were correcting an injustice, a grave injustice, a crime, which is true. And here the Givonim, they're scared, they're frightened for their lives, undoubtedly, and they have good reason to be frightened for their lives, but they're not avenging a crime. That's true, right. So the parallel is not exact, which again makes this still a telling lesson, that if you engage with a certain midah in your interaction with others, then might come back to bite you, so to speak. Which is a good musar in general. You know, if you don't take the most honest approach, sometimes it comes back to bite you. Midah kenegan midah. It's a good musar. Sometimes it happens in business. You know, someone is not exactly 100% honest in his dealings with somebody else, and then, you know, sometime later, he gets the raw end of the deal himself, in perhaps a very similar fashion. I think of one example in particular that just comes to mind. But you know, sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mida Kenegan Mida. That's how you think is appropriate to act. That's how it will end up being done to you as well. So the Navi, according to Rashi, is alluding to that Musar here, which again, your point is well taken, that Bnei Yaakov had every reason to do what they did, because they were dealing with rapist, kidnapper, and even so, they were, at least on their madriga, faulted for not having done it with the most honest and straightforward sort of way. And now Bnei Yaakov, Bnei Yisrael, suffer at the hands of the Chivi. Again, that same treatment. Okay, so that's the pshat of Rashi in the Vayasu Gam Hema Be'orma. The Radak gives a different interpretation. Radak says, Vaya'asu gam hema be'orma means they too acted with deceit, meaning who else acted that way? In their mind, Klal Yisrael acted that way just now in their dealings with Yericho and I. Because the Givonim, Radak assumed or thought that the Bnei Yisrael first caught Yericho and I off guard by making a peace offering, treaty offer to them, and then double-crossed them, so to speak. They thought that Bnei Yisrael acted with deceit, and therefore they also said, okay, we must do the same to ensure that we avoid the same fate that befell Yericho and I. So that's how the Radak understands Vayasu Gam Hema Ba'arma. Now the Rishonim here, interestingly enough, the Rambam and the Ramban, the Rambam in Hilchas Malachim, and the Ramban in Parshas Shoftim Perek Chaf. So the Rambam in Hilchas Malachim Perek Vav writes, why did Yoshve Givon resort to deceit? Because Rambam writes, Yoshua initially, as the Pasuk tells us in Shoftim, Ki sikrav el er lehi lachem aleha, when you prepare for battle against the city, vikarasa eleha l'shalom, you must reach out first with a peace offering. So Rambam writes, initially Yeshua did just that. Yeshua reached out to all of the Umos living in Eretz Canaan, and they refused the offer. And the B'nai Gibbon says, the Rambam thought that once the nations as a whole refused and rejected that offer, they didn't think they had any hope now of requesting that peace treaty, and therefore they thought their only hope was to resort to deceit. So writes the Rambam. The Ramban writes that they themselves might have rejected this peace offering initially, but now they regretted it. Now they're afraid. Now they say, oh, that was a bad idea. Look at Jericho. Look at I. We made the wrong move. We've got to now figure out some other way to save our skin here. But because they had already rejected the peace offering themselves, they thought that they would not be entitled to now request a peace treaty yet again. And therefore they resorted, says the Ramban, to deceit. And Psukim now described to us, like we said before, how they disguised themselves as emissaries coming from a faraway country. But note in Pasuk Vav and in Pasuk Zayin and in Pasuk Ches, some interesting subtle details in the words of the Pasuk. In Pasuk Vav, we're told, Vayelchu el Yoshua el Hamachane HaGilgal. They approached Yoshua in the camp where the Jews were staying in Gilgal. Vayomru Elav ve'el Ish Yisrael. They don't just speak to Yoshua, they speak to Yoshua and to Ish Yisrael, implying they're making a public appeal. They're trying to garner public support, maybe generate some political pressure on Yoshua here. Perhaps garner some sympathy. And they tell the entirety of the people, it sounds like, oh, we come, Me'aretz Rechoka, Vata Kirsud Lanu Bris, make a covenant, a peace treaty with us. But in Pasuk Zayin, in response, their approach seems to have backfired. Their appeal to the general Ish Yisrael seems to have aroused some suspicions here. Normally, as Malcolm points out, you want to make a peace treaty between two distant nations, you don't involve the public. It's ambassador to ambassador, ambassador to king. It's king to king. It's a private discussion in the capital city, in the government offices. Why are you appealing to the entire nation? And once they did that, the entire nation responds. Vayomer Ish Yisrael. In response, the average Jew responds to the Chivi. Ulai b'kir b'yato Yoshev. Maybe you live nearby. How can I make a covenant with you? How can I trust you? They were suspicious, the average Jew. Why are you involving us in these negotiations? You know, the negotiations are between heads of state, not between, you don't come to the public to negotiate your terms. So what happens about Zechess? They realize their mistake. Vayomru el Yehoshua. They now respond not to the Ish Yisrael, they now respond to Yehoshua. They see, oh, that didn't work out too well. Appealing to the public masses, that was a mistake. Now we got them suspicious of us. Okay, leave them out of it. Now we're going to go to Yeshua only. Talk to the head of state alone. And now look how they rephrase their appeal. In the first Pasuk Vav, they said simply, we come from a different distant land, make a treaty with us. Now when they see they arouse suspicions, now they appeal to Yeshua only, but they rephrase their introduction. And notice how now they say, Avadecha Anachnu, we're your servants all of a sudden. You know, they're being very submissive now to Yoshua. And Yeshua asks them, Miatem, who are you? Me'ayin Tavo, where do you come from? And they say, Me'eretz Rechoka Ma'od, from a very distant land. They're emphasizing that again. But here again, they emphasize, Bo'u Avadecha, your servants have come. Now they're trying as much as possible to submit themselves to Yeshua's authority, and they add in L'shem Hashem Elokecha. We're coming for the sake of God. Interesting. They throw in this religious peace now. Initially they came, we want a peace treaty. Suspicions. Okay, they suddenly now exclude the Ish Yisrael from the process. They focus on Yeshua with the double emphasis on Avadecha Anachanu and Bo Avadecha and L'shem Hashem Elokecha. All of a sudden they're very holy servants of God, L'shem Shemayim, almost implying like we want to acknowledge and accept God upon ourselves. And in fact, Ramban in Parashas Shoftim in Perek Chaf picks up on this phrase. He says, why are they emphasizing Ba'u Avadecha L'shem Hashem Elokecha? They're saying, we're not going to worship Avodah Zarah anymore. We're going to become, in that sense, you know, God-fearing or God-believing B'nai Noach. We're going to accept God as sole creator. We're not worshiping Avodah Zarah anymore. You know, they're making a compromise here. After all, isn't that what you Jews want? You want us to all accept God as the sole creator? Here we are, L'shem Hashem Elokecha. We're coming with belief in God now. So they're really like sweetening the pot, almost making like, how can you fight against us? We're doing what you want. We're accepting God's dominion over the world. And then they add, we've heard about God and what God did to Mitzrayim. So they've appealed to Yeshua exclusively. They've made it very, very tempting by twice emphasizing their servitude to Yehoshua, emphasizing their acceptance of God, becoming L'shem Hashem Elokecha. And in Pasuk Yudalid, Vayikhu ha'anashim mitzei dam. The men accept their tzedam implies like their entrapment. You know, they took the bait. They took the bait. They believed their story. They believed their story. And then the Pasuk emphasizes in Pasuk Yudalid, Vespi Hashem lo sha'alu. I skipped a few psukim here, so I just fill that in. You know, after they emphasize, became l'shem Hashem l'kecha, they describe how we heard what God did to the Amori, what God did to Sichon and Og, and our elders and our fellow residents told us, take food, go to greet them, tell them that we are your servants. Again, a third emphasis on Avdecha Menachanu and Pasuk Yud Aleph. And they point to their bread. We took it when it was hot and fresh, and now look at it now. It's dry and moldy. And look at the flasks of wine that we filled up as they were brand new. Now they're all cracked and dried out. Look at our shoes. Look at our clothing. Well, they're really, really piling it on heavy. And so in Pasuk Yud Aleph, like Chu Anashim Mitzei Dam, the men, the Jewish men, took the bait, and then Vespi Hashem Lo Sha'alu. And here the Navi very subtly faults Yehoshua and Bnei Yisrael for not asking God. Vespi Hashem Lo Sha'alu. They didn't ask God. They could have and they should have consulted the Urim V'Tumim. It was right there. They could have just asked God, what should we do? Who are these people? Yes or no? And for whatever reason, they didn't consult God. It seemed to them so obvious, they felt they didn't need to. And that was their mistake, it seems. That was their mistake. Now, interesting. You know, why and how could they have made such an error not to consult God? Sometimes, I guess when something seems so obvious, and for whatever reason you're inclined to believe it, maybe because it felt so good to be addressed as, oh, we are your servants, we are your servants, we are your servants, three times in a row. Maybe because it sounded so religious of them to say that we're coming, L'shem Hashem Elokecha. You know, they're looking religious, sounding religious. It seemed like it was such an obvious no-brainer that they failed to appreciate the need, even under such circumstances, to consult with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that ultimately was their fault here. And what happens then at Pasuk Tesvav? Yehoshua agrees to peace with them. He makes a treaty with them not to kill them. And then the clincher is Vayishavu lahem nesiei ha'eda. The princes, the nesiim, swore to this treaty with the emissaries coming from Givon. And here, the Malbim writes that they should have, if they wanted to accept a peace treaty with Givon, they should have insisted upon the Anshe Givon being servants to them and paying taxes to them going forward. They didn't stipulate that. It's only under those circumstances that there might be some allowance for allowing them to live if they would be avadim, paying taxes, but they didn't insist on them. And the Malbim writes that was their error here. The Ramban as well, in Parashat Shoftim says that they should have, if they're going to accept the treaty with them, they should have insisted upon making them servants, making them taxpayers. They didn't do so. They made this covenant, says Ramban, this treaty, as if we're allies. You'll assist us in battle. We'll assist you. That wasn't the way it was supposed to be. If you're going to make a treaty with anybody, says Ramban, it's going to have to be on your terms. If you're not going to die, you're going to be servants, paying us taxes, and that's it. But they gave them almost equal ally status, and that was the big mistake here, says the Ramban. Ramban says, as we pointed out before, that the Givonim accepted upon themselves not to worship Avodah Zarah. And that wasn't the issue here, but the issue was that they weren't designated at the start as Avadim and as taxpayers. So writes Ramban here in explaining the fault of the Bnei Yisrael, of the Nesiim in particular, I should say, and Yeshua. And then the Navi concludes by describing how 3 days go by, and notice that the Bnei Yisrael were not described as having been part of this discussion at this point anymore. The Navi says that in Pasuk Tezvav, Yeshua made peace with them, he made the treaty with them to keep them alive, and the Nesiim swore to them. But there's no mention here of the Ish Yisrael. And so now, 3 days later, in Pasuk Tezayin, we're told that they suddenly hear Krovim Heim Ela Bekirbohem Yoshrim. Oh, they live right nearby. They live amongst you. And this must have come as a shock suddenly that they're here to stay. They're not going anywhere. And the Bnei Yisrael now, in Pasuk Tezayin, confront them in their cities named Givon, Kfira, Be'eros, Kiryas, Ya'arim. But in Pasuk Yudches, they don't kill them because the Nesiim swore by God's name. And instead, the nation is very upset at the princes, at the Nesiim, for having made such a treaty with a nation living right here in Eretz Canaan. And the Nesiim say, sorry, we swore by God, we can't touch them. Now what's here is interesting is the Rambam and the Rabag and others say that although they might have wanted to kill them, but they couldn't. Why? The Rambam writes, because of Chilul Hashem. They couldn't because of Chilul Hashem. The Rambam, Hilchos Melachim, Perek Vav Halacha Hey, writes that Hoel Ubetos Nishbu Lehen. The truth is, this was an oath that was made under mistaken pretenses. It wasn't that, oh my gosh, we swore we can't violate our oath. No. The oath itself would not have been binding. The oath was made because they lied as to who they were, where they lived. So as far as the oath is concerned, that wouldn't have prevented them from attacking and killing the Givonim. The oath was a shvu betos. It was under mistaken pretenses. But why did they not kill them? Because as the Pasuk emphasizes in Pasuk Yutes, Anachnu Nishbanu Lahem Bashem Elokei Yisrael. We swore by God's name. And the Rambam says, although, strictly speaking, they should have been killed because they lied, and the Shuvu was a Shuvu Betos, but Lulei Chil Hashem, it was the Chil Hashem they were worried about. They're worried about, how's it going to look? We swore by God's name, and now all the excuses you can give, well, it was mistaken pretenses, you lied, that's not going to matter at the end of the day. Everyone's going to say, oh, look at the Jews. The Jews swore by God's name, the Jews are deceitful, the Jews are liars, the Jews are not honest, the Jews this, the Jews that, and it's going to reflect poorly on a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And it's also an important lesson how a Jew has to be so sensitive to perception. And even if and when, as here, you might be in the right, we were lied to, we were deceived, our Shavu doesn't count, it was not made under the proper circumstances, it was under mistaken pretenses. But perception matters. How are people going to look at the Jewish nation, talk about the Jewish nation? How is it going to reflect upon us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It was the Chil HaShem, says the Rambam. And so too says the Rabag. It was the Chil HaShem that was the critical issue here that held them back from killing the Givonim. As Rabag writes, the Ovdei Avodah Zarah will think, Ein Yiras Hashem b'Yisrael. There's no fear of God by these Jews. They just talk and swear, and then they do what they want. So to prevent that Chil Hashem, that was why they refused to violate the Shavuah. What they did do, however, the Pasuk tells us in Pasuk Chaf, we'll let them live, but, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, they have to be wood choppers, water drawers, they have to serve the nation. Serve the nation. And Yoshua, when he confronts the Givonim, he says in Pasuk Chav Gimel, Arurim Atem, you are cursed. You are cursed. And from now on, says Yeshua, you will always be servants, woodchoppers, water drawers, lebeis elokai, to service the Mishkan, service the Mizbeach, bring wood for the Mizbeach. And they answer that, we heard that God had given this land to you and that you're going to destroy all the residents of the land. We were afraid for our lives, therefore we did what we did. But they concede. They say, we're in your hands, do what you want. But Yeshua, again, because of the Chil HaShem, did not kill them. He made them Chut Ve'etzim, Shov Ve'mayim. And until this very day, says the Navi, they remain such. And there ends the Perek Tes. And then Pasuk Yud, all of a sudden now we move on to we move on to other battles with other nation states or nation cities within Eretz Canaan. But the lessons here of the Mida Keneged Mida, B'nai Yisrael acted Be'arma with Shechem, even though it might have been justified, but it wasn't appropriate for how a Ben Yisrael should act. Hence, Mida Keneged Mida, they were deceived as well. And notice, Yaakov criticized B'nai Yaakov when they interacted with Shechem because of Chil HaShem purposes. Right? Looks bad. You tricked them. You lied to them. Now you killed them. And now, it's almost as if this is a tikkun for that. This is a rectification of that. The Mida Keneged Mida resulted in the B'nai Yisrael being deceived, but now they did tshuva, so to speak. They atoned for what B'nai Yaakov did with Shechem, because now, when they were deceived, they didn't say, oh, we'll kill you because we have the right. Here they were sensitive to Chil Shem Shemayim. They were able to resist that temptation to act out against the Givonim. It's almost like a tikkun, a kapara, an atonement, a making right of what they did wrong with B'nai Shechem. Now they're making up for that here, having been deceived, but getting the message, getting the lesson, and watching out for Chil Shem Shemayim and being careful to avoid in any which way causing any sort of Chil Hashem. Okay, so we'll stop here. And B'ez Hashem, pick up next week with Perek Yud.